Committee on Finance and Revenue is open. Today is CPA Day, and we are going to open a public hearing and work session on House Bill 4025. That is the Reconnect Bill, and we will go through our the Reconnect and some of those changes with the CPAs. First, we'll get a quick briefing on what the actual legislation does. And while I do that, I'll call up Heather, Susanna, and Gary to make your presentation and walk us through it. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the House Bill 4025, there's an A2 amendment in OLIS, but it updates the connection to the Internal Revenue Code and some other provisions in federal tax law, and that changes the date from December 31st, 2014 to December 31st, 2015. There's a lot of references in various governing statutes of the PERS system and some language about what defines shareholders and S corporations that may represent their companies in proceedings before the tax court. And there's some language in the charitable checkoff. And all of those things are affected by this date change, and it's just references to various parts of the Internal Revenue Code. And so the there is also the A2 amendment would remove the requirement that ABLE accounts only be provided for people who are in state, and would allow these accounts to be provided for and anyone out of state as well. And this was sort of mirroring some changes that were made at the federal level. There is a component of this where the earned income tax credit has been expanded at the federal level, and there's been a widening of the brackets for people who are married, and also a credit percentage of 45% or more for three or more qualifying children that was extended through 2017 previously has now become made permanent at the federal level. And so the connection to this federal EITC at the 8% level would cost there's no impact in 2015-17, but 17-19 has a $2 million impact negative, and 19-21 has a $5.4 million impact from the changes to the EITC. The measure has been found to have no fiscal impact. And so the A2 amendment also, Kristen Dennis from Treasury is available if there are questions about what specifically is in that amendment that they needed to encompass more than just people in the state.
Okay. Thank you. Welcome, CPAs. Are you, as part of your thing, going to talk about the earned income tax increase, bracket change? You are? Okay, good. Because that's of interest to us, because we have some legislation in the pipeline on that, too. So, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Hodge, committee members. I'm Gary Holcomb. I'm a CPA representing the Oregon Society of CPAs.
Thank you, Senator Haas and chair members. I'm Heather Jackson with Dual Conradi and OSCPA.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Susanna Leidig. I work with Moss Adams, and I'm here as a representative of OSCPA to discuss the Federal Reconnect.
Great. So I'll do some introduction, and then we'll flip kind of through all these sections. And this year it's thicker than in years past. There was a lot more changes if you have the weight of all of them. So we'll probably skip around quite a bit, you know, jump through a lot of sections and ignore others. So if there's questions as we go, please, you know, stop us and ask. As you know, the main purpose that we're here for is a technical resource, but then secondarily it is to promote connectivity to it. Oregon's been connected for a number of years, and as this bill, as you know, most of the provisions are the permanent connection to federal taxable income, and then there's others that have to be connected every year, every session if the Congress changes those items. There still are two items that were disconnected, that Oregon has chosen to be disconnected from, and that's the domestic production activities deduction, section 199, as well as the exclusion for certain prescription drugs. So we're still disconnected from those two provisions. We divide it into five kind of areas, and we'll each cover certain ones. The A section is ones that we just feel will be reconnected. If you choose to do nothing different, you'll be reconnected, and we'll follow all the federal provisions. Section B is there's no Oregon change necessary. It affects like credits and other federal provisions that don't necessarily impact Oregon taxable income. C will cover some of those. Those are some items that we think need to be changed. D's are more just informational. They reference the tax code, but necessarily don't impact it. And then E is some that we just want to inform you of the changes and how it could impact Oregon, but not necessarily taxable income. I think the biggest thing as we're going through this to think about that's been different from in prior years is that the dates of the reconnect, the last several sessions, as we know, we've been retroactively reconnecting to the prior year. So, you know, we'll be debating in January whether it should be reconnected to the prior session. This year, Congress has enacted a number of provisions that are permanent. Some that are retroactive and become permanent, some that are 2 years, some that are 5 years. So it is important to kind of realize that it's not going to be a yearly exercise like this for Congress. There's some that are just now permanent and some that they won't have to debate for several years again.
There is an advantage, is there not, of meeting in the short session rather than 2017 as we would have done historically?
So absolutely.
There's one argument. Yeah.
Sure. Really especially small. In a big year like this.
Well, I mean, this is a real, below the radar kind of nitty gritty governmental thing that is a real convenience for taxpayers if we can do it now as opposed to waiting for the off year.
Totally agree. So I'll cover the first section on these A's. So it starts on page 1, and again, these are items that we are going to be reconnected to unless you choose to be different. The first one that is section 62, and that's the teacher expense deduction, and that it kind of expands the deduction that teachers are allowed to take. It's the $250 per year, but now they can take CLEs, and that is made permanent, so we won't have to deal with that again at the federal level.
CLE. What is CLE?
CLE.
Oh, CLE.
Continuing education. I'm sorry. I probably referred to it in our vernacular, not the teacher vernacular. Sorry.
But we deal with so many in the building that I don't even know where I'm at the time.
The next one I'll cover on page 2, which is section 108, has been made permanent for 2 years, for home mortgage forgiveness is not being counted as income. Section 117 on the same page is for work learning service programs, similar to scholarships and other types of aid. Those won't be counted into income, and that's a permanent change. Section 132 on page 3 is the monthly exclusion for mass transit and parking benefits is $250, and that $250 is made permanent for that. Section 163 is the mortgage premium insurance deduction, and that's retroactively extended through to 15 and 16, but will go away at the end of 16. The next one on page 3 is 164, and the 164 is the sales tax deduction. So being able to take that as an itemized deduction for the sales tax you paid, that is made permanent, a permanent change to the code. The next, page 4 through page 10 are basically the bonus depreciation provisions. So I won't cover all of them, and if there are specific questions, I'll point out a few of them. Yeah, often, like on page 4, there's things that are like motorsports and racehorses and things that are always, get a shake of the head.
Yeah,
so,
we've talked about this before about task force or work group to go through instead of just two places where we do not connect, but I'm not suggesting here, but making any recommendations, it probably would be helpful to go through and say, are there other places we need to disconnect?
And that was why we kind of broke it apart this year, because there were so many provisions, so we tried to be as specific as we could, but they're all similar types of concepts.
You're not going to go after my old car restoration now, are you?
And a lot of these are for 2 years too. So So yeah. The retroactive and the 1 year. So these aren't, a lot of these aren't made permanent. But if you look at page 5, if you look at the 168, which is like on the extra depreciation on for cars, that's a 5-year provision this time. But it's a 5-year provision, but then they added an amendment to change it where it will drop down in the last 2 years. So for example, in 15 through 17, it will be $8,000. Then in 18, it drops to 64. 19, it drops to 4,800. So there's a couple of provisions that are similar to that within these, how they increase and then drop down.
Can you explain that car?
So certain cars weren't treated as qualified property. So in order to be qualified, they have to have a special exception for that, and then they chose the amounts. Is that
question?
Senator Burchard.
So, in other words, an SUV may not qualify for a 179 tax deduction for a business?
So this provision is specifically for luxury vehicles.
Okay, that's SUV.
But if you're over 6,000 pounds, that's a heavy vehicle, and you're limited by 25,000 of Section 179, and you still get bonus. So this is specifically the luxury vehicles, your sports cars, your lighter SUVs, where they limit your deduction. So, and they do it over 5 years.
Not that you need to know, not that you should know this, but what's the policy reasoning for this?
The what?
The policy reasoning for this? You're just accountants.
You know? So people can't go out and buy expensive cars and write them all off?
Yeah.
That was why they had the exception. But then they made an exception to it, yeah.
Yeah.
So to allow some benefit.
Yeah.
So. The luxury car dealers have good lobbyists in D.C.
So.
Thank you.
Probably not the dealers. Probably the manufacturer.
That's what I said.
Oh.
Yeah. So that gets us. Oh, I think on page 9 there is one that might be of interest to the committee, and on 168K5, that allowed some relaxed place and service rules for fruit and plants bearing fruit and nuts. So in Oregon, that's probably very significant to people. And what those place in service rules will say, generally it's not placed in service until it's producing, but obviously it takes a while for a tree to produce. So they're saying when it's planted than when it actually gets into production will qualify for the bonus depreciation provisions. Then if we move on to page 10, all the Section 170 items are conservation easements and encouraging deductions and contributions to qualified conservation easements. Page 12, we have the Section 179. So the 179, as we said earlier, is a corollary to the bonus depreciation, but allows the automatic expensing for certain items with the dollar amounts. So that is that's made permanent now. So that's always been similar to bonus where it was extended, but it is made permanent this time. And then if you look on the following pages, similar to what you had said, Chairman Haas, there's certain classifying items what qualifies for Section 179, and they made a number of changes to those heating units, all different kinds of classifications, and made exceptions and clarifications on what can be expensed on the next pages. If you go to page 14, there's again just a number of different provisions. Theatrical productions are allowed to expense permanently. Film and television productions are allowed 2 years expensing provisions. Section 222 is the qualified tuition deduction. So that one was put in place for 2 years.
What's the cap on that?
Isn't it 4,000?
I think it's 4,000. I think it's limited.
4,000. So.
And then there's income limitation phase outs as well. I don't know where those start, but yeah. Then the last one, and then there's all those last provisions on 355 and things are dealing with certain REITs and that REITs aren't allowed to spin off some companies aren't allowed to spin off certain of their real property assets into REITs anymore. There was a prohibition about that. So that covers it for me.
You did?
Yep.
Okay. I'm starting on page 15, code section 402. Code section 402 on page 15 and then code section 403 on the next page. These are dealing with like airlines and churches specifically. So
airlines and churches.
Just clarifications for them.
Airlines and churches, they have what in common? Other than this tax code?
I know. I'm going to draw your attention to, and I'm on page 16, 408D8, which is the second line. Tax-free IRA distributions, basically if you're 70 and a half and take any minimum distributions, you can take that minimum distribution and drop it out at a charity and have no tax impact for you. That has been made permanent. It isn't an extender anymore. It is permanently there. The next 408P1B is simple retirement accounts. Had a lot of limitations on them. They've opened it up so they can have roll-ins from other plans because it is a retirement plan. So they opened up that. 451 is electric transmission. Again, an oddball. On page 17, code section 460, the percentage of completion for contractors. This now conforms with a bonus depreciation that affects the percent complete. It now ties to the bonus depreciation rules. And 501H is agricultural research organizations are now allowed to deduct lobbying expenses.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Riley.
Thank you. Could you back up to 408?
Uh-huh.
Being in that class. is this saying that instead of just getting the partial deduction for charity contributions, if I do it with my IRA required distribution, that it's 100%?
So it's non-taxable to you. Your distribution that would normally be taxable to you is non-taxable to you because it's going straight over to a charity, but there's no charitable deduction because you didn't have to pay tax on it. So it's kind of like
right, but if I took it and then later did a charitable deduction, a charitable contribution, I only get a deduction.
Yeah, that is correct. And you pay tax on your
on the
withdrawal.
Okay, I think I'm going to change when we do our charitable deduction.
Yeah, contributions.
Okay.
Yeah. And just know if you do this, don't wait till the last day or two of the year. It is kind of a more lengthy process to go from your IRA to a charity. It does take about a week. It isn't a quick.
Understood. Thank you.
And for other questions that we may ask you about our personal situation, if you want to turn the meter on, that's
fine.
That's okay. Can you get an invoice?
Yeah. Any other? Okay. So I'm now on page 18. The first two, 506 and 512, are regarding to the 501c4 organizations, which are the social welfares. They've never had to register with the IRS before, and now they are required to do so. The 529A on page 18 is the ABLE accounts, and I saw that you guys made a change to match federal that anybody in any state can do it. So on page 19, these are the 529 plans, and they just made some minor rule changes. The biggest one that I'm impressed with is if you receive a refund because of tuition changing or whatnot, you can take the money and put it back into your 529, and there's no harm, no foul. There's no taxability to you. It just kind of comes back, and you can put it back in. The other nice thing is they added computers and equipment to the item of what includes higher education expenses. So that's nice because computers are becoming more essential. On page 20,
The first two, 562, covers REITs, the Real Estate Investment Trust. Very complicated. There's really no practical way to disconnect for Oregon, so I've kind of skipped those. 664. This is the remainder interest of certain charitable remainder unit trusts. They've just clarified what early termination means and how you deal with it. Page 21, 831, non-life insurance companies can use regular corporate tax rates on their investment income if they make that election. The page 21, 857 through page 25 is again all the REITs and RICs, the foreign transactions that I don't really feel like you want to hear about. So I'm done with my.
Is Panama in there?
I looked up the caps on the tuition, the higher education tuition expense, if you would like those. It's $4,000 for taxpayers with a modified AGI that doesn't exceed $65,000. It's $2,000 for taxpayers with a modified AGI over 65 but doesn't exceed 80. And those above 80 is zero. Okay. So the sections that I'll be discussing with you throughout the rest of Part A, most of them have to do with either extending certain temporary provisions or making them permanent. So on page 25, 953 and 954, subpart F, active financing income exclusions were made permanent. And it extends through December of 2019, the foreign personal holding company income look-through rules. Section 1016 excludes federal financial assistance amounts received through certain clean coal power initiative from gross income of certain corporations. Section 1202, the 100% gain exclusion for qualified small business stock was retroactively restored and made permanent. The next page, 1367, made the limitation on shareholder basis decrease for S corporation charitable contributions of property permanent. 1374 made the temporary 5-year recognition period for S corp built-in gains permanent. 7508 limits the extension of the tax collection period created by special allowances for armed service members to be 10 years plus the actual time spent in a combat zone. Section 4980, the 40% excise tax on excess health care coverage costs, once it's imposed, will be deductible. Currently, it's in a moratorium until 2020. The next page, 420, transfers. It extends the window that a defined benefit plan can make sanction-free transfers of excess pension assets to retiree health or life insurance plans to 4 years.
Senator Birchick, did you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair.
I apologize.
Going back to the Cadillac tax or the Cadillac health care, that's referring to medical plans, correct?
Yes.
So if I have a good medical plan for my wife and I, that's not deductible. Is that correct?
Just in your individual capacity.
Individual capacity.
Yeah.
But if I get a Cadillac plan through a business that I work for, the business can deduct it.
Are you questioning like the imposition of this penalty of tax or the actual policy premiums?
The policy premiums.
Okay. That
is
your
question. Yes. Just a business expense.
So it would be prudent to start a business and have the business pay your medical, and then it would be a deduction in lieu of paying the medical yourself and not being a deduction. Is that a good statement?
If you had a valid business purpose for forming a business corporation.
End up getting audited.
No, I work for, I get my medical through the state right now. I'm not worried about that. But no, I just wanted to clarify. Make sure I understood that.
So page 27, code section 1014 requires the income tax basis of inherited property not exceed the value used to determine the estate.
Yep.
Code section 430 extends the favorable interest rates through 2020 and provides the new requirements for use of a substitute mortality table for determining funding of a defined benefit plan. Page 28, code section 704 clarifies family partnership rules on interest created by gifts, which were previously misinterpreted in some courts as alternatives to the general intent test. Code section 771 through 777, previous partnership audit rules were replaced with a new single set. There was two separate sets previously. 223, a veteran's HSA eligibility will not be impacted by service-related medical care provided by the VA. Sloppy handwriting on my notes. The next page, 222, requires taxpayers to have a 1098-T in order to claim the higher education credits or deduct tuition fees. 104, compensation received for death or disability of a public safety officer is not taxable. Next page, 170, and both those provisions provide special rules for contributions made to New York police officers Ramos and Liu. It allowed a window in 2015 for the first 4.5 months where they could take that for contributions that were made in that time period, they could take the deduction on their 2014 tax year return. So it's in some degrees over, and it provided for some relaxed record keeping requirements for those donations. But again, applies just to that 4.5 month window that's already passed and those two officers in particular.
Pretty specific for federal tax
law. I can't remember either of those individuals in the news either.
Okay. So that covers section A. Section B will be fairly straightforward. Again, these are items that we don't predict, think an Oregon change is needed. Oregon isn't connected for a variety of reasons to these. As Ms. Jackson said, she'll cover the earned income tax credit in C because that does tie, even though it's a credit, there are provisions that do tie. So, most of these are just credit type items and other items. One I'll point out on page 32 that's of general interest usually to the committee members is that the research credit is retroactively restored and now it's made permanent. So again, Oregon doesn't tie to the amount of the credit, but it ties to how the credit is calculated. There's a number of provisions again about REITs. The ones I think I will cover, if you flip to page 42, again, all the pages before were just a variety of credits and REITs, is in the Fixing America's Surface Transportation Act, there were a number of provisions to change the filing dates of corporate returns and in particular partnership returns. And for federal purposes, basically what happened is most of the flow-through entity returns, instead of being due on 415, are now due on 315. So you'll have partnerships and S-corps and due on 315. And the theory, the reasoning being, allowing you enough time to get those reports to file your personal income tax return a month in advance, as well as corporations that may own interest in flow-throughs. So basically, it's just that shift to the partnership, and then the corps and the trust shift later to be 415. Now, for Oregon, one of the amendments in this provision was to tie. We were previously tied for the partnerships to be on the same day as the Fed 415, and it specifically said 415. I believe the amendment now says 315, so they'll be due the same as the Fed. The other ones are the other provisions that tie to this is Oregon returns are due 30 days after the federal due date. So again, you don't need to do anything because they're still due 30 days after. It just may change the actual date it's due. And the other thing I think to think about when you're thinking about due dates is it's truly only the due date. It's not when the tax is due. So the it's not going to impact when the tax is due or when penalties imposed. It's just when the actual return is due.
Okay.
I think that was it on all the Section Bs. Questions on Section Bs?
Right. We're going to move on to Section C, which we think that Oregon change is necessary, and I'm going to cover these in a little more detail because I do believe these are of interest to you. One is the earned income tax credit. So I am on page 49, first. The first one is 32B1 and 3. This is the earned income credit that went 45% for people with taxpayers with three or more qualifying children. This rule was temporary. It is now permanent. As a reminder, Oregon's earned income credit is 8% of the federal amount. So that obviously increases the amount for a longer period of time, the Oregon credit. The marriage penalty is made permanent. Or the lack thereof. They made the bracket bigger, so there's no marriage penalty for the earned income tax credit. And a really big one is that to have the earned income tax credit now, you have to have a Social Security number for the child before filing the tax returns. So it may require extensions or not getting to claim it that year if you do not have a Social Security number. So those are like the three major.
Okay. Christine was explaining that the brackets change, which will have a revenue impact. Could you walk us through that? How that, assuming?
So right now, I don't know what the actual bracket amounts are, but normally the married people have a smaller tax bracket and they widened it so people with higher income can get the earned income credit now. So I don't know. Do you have the numbers?
This is 2015. Book date, but I believe that these are the bracket numbers. Does this help you?
So it doesn't say what it went back to. So right now in 2015, if you have three or more children, it's phased out at 18,000 of earned income is what this is saying. So, oh wait, there it is. It's 53,000.
53?
53,000. If a joint couple or married couple have $53,300 in income, they can't claim the earned income credit.
So if you have three children, it phases out at 53,000. So anything less than that, you get all the proportion?
You get a portion of it. It kind of is phasing out.
What income would you max out that tax credit?
I think it is that 53.
It's the 53, it's 267. So that's where you can get the most.
Is that what? Is that 53,000?
Yeah. So if you have three kids and you're a joint filer.
Okay.
So as an example, if you only have one child, it's 44,000. So you can see there's a little bit.
And what is, let's just take that case, one child, 44,000, what is the credit on the federal side for that case?
One child. 3,359.
And what would the state be?
8% of that.
Yeah.
8% of that, yeah. So $400.
Yep.
Something.
Yeah. And if you had the three children, like we mentioned before, the first example, the credit is $6,242.
Okay. And the bill that the House is looking at expands the state to 11% if you have children under three.
Okay.
So, small increase there.
When would they have to be three? At the beginning of the year or the end of the year?
Yes.
By the end.
Usually it's the last day.
Last day.
Last day.
There was a proposal that Paul Warner and I worked on that would be a compromise to our ballot measure that expanded the earned income tax credit to 18%. Just a minor little plug. Any other questions on the EITC?
Okay.
Thanks.
The other one that is on here is 41H, which is the small business research and research credit. That one, if you're a qualified small business, which is a business that is in business less than 5 years and gross receipts under $5 million, you can actually take your credit on your payroll tax forms rather than on your tax return. So this will impact the Oregon credit, because I know you are tied to the federal one on the federal tax return, and now people are going to be potentially taking it on their payroll returns, the 941s and such.
And the policy reason behind that being most of these small startups are in losses and have no ability to use the credit, and now they'd have an ability to use it against their payroll tax withholding.
Wow.
Okay.
You start a new business every 5 years.
Any questions on that one? And then moving on the bottom of page 49, the section 199, the domestic production activity deduction, which Oregon is not tied to. They added Puerto Rico and extended it, so Puerto Rico now counts. And then on page 50, still section 199, the oil refineries can deduct can exclude 75% of their oil transportation costs when computing this, because those costs reduce the credit, so now they don't have to reduce it quite so much. So.
Okay.
Any questions on section C?
Nope.
Okay, thank you.
All right, so I'll talk about sections D and E with you. If you recall from the opening that these affect provisions of the tax code but do not necessarily either impact tax law or taxable income necessarily. So on the first page, the provisions affect court rules such as proceedings in the tax court will now be in accordance with federal rules of evidence. They require the court to develop procedures for investigating complaints filed against the tax court, and it broadens the authority of the tax court so that it's the same as the other courts at its level. 708 requires the IRS commissioner to ensure IRS employees are aware of and act in accordance with the taxpayer rights. The first one on page 52, the annual fee imposed on health insurance providers is suspended for calendar year through calendar year 2017. 7345 and 7508 that will not allow somebody with more than $50,000 in tax liabilities, IRS tax liens, to receive a passport. And the last part, the Bipartisan Budget Act, just provided for changes in procedures related to certain lawsuits that involve enjoining this assessment or collection of any tax. The last section E on page 53, the medical device excise tax is suspended for 2 years. Most of these are about additional excise tax credits. And different aspects of those natures. And if you'll give me 1 second, my notes are actually in a different section, and I might be able to go through this a little bit more quickly for you. I apologize. So 6426 and 6427, and then the ones below, the paragraphs below, have to do with alternative and biodiesel fuel. excise taxes. 4980I, the imposition of the Cadillac tax, is delayed until 2020, effectively, is the year it would be imposed. 4980 as more of the federal tax. I'm so sorry, the Cadillac tax. 4041 provides for various higher fuels excise tax rates being extended. And that, all of the next section on page 54 has to do with transportation and fuels type excise taxes with that industry. On page 55, first paragraph, the due date for pension benefit guarantee corporations premium dates is being accelerated by 1 month, so it's being moved up a month for them. The next section provides for a definition of larger large employers in connection with the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. It's 51 instead of 101. Airport and Airway Extension Act of 2015 is excise taxes associated with those industries. And the last page has more, another quick section about the New York officers and a special provision pertaining to them. Have any questions about any parts or anything else that we can provide you with any information or assistance on?
Any questions for our accountants on the reconnect, the federal changes?
I reserve the right to answer, ask questions at a later date.
We might not have a later date.
Well, we really appreciate you walking us through these things every year, and it really is a big help in compiling this for us, and appreciate your facilitator, Rob Douglas, for bringing you all together and being your ambassador down here. And I do think we said this in 2015, it would behoove us to look at some of these federal deductions and see if there's a way to not necessarily be an outlier, but if there's a smarter deduction for Oregon, a more targeted something that, you know, hit Oregon's get in sync with Oregon's economy, R&D, whatever, and decouple from something else. So we'll maybe put together an informal work group during the interim and maybe have some changes in 2017. But okay. Thank you very much for your help.
Thank you.
Did we want to talk about the amendment from the Treasurer's Office? Why don't you come on up? We have someone from the Treasurer's Office here. Yeah. And then we're ready to move this.
Is this the only thing in there?
This is the only thing. Okay. Yeah.
Hello.
Hi.
For the record, I'm Kristen Dennis, Policy Director in the Oregon State Treasury. I'm here today to answer any questions that you might have about the Dash 2 amendment. If it helps, I can kind of provide you a quick overview. On December 18th of 2015, Congress passed the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2016. Section 303 of that act amended Section 529A of the Internal Revenue Code, eliminating the residency requirement for qualified ABLE programs. When you passed SB 777 in 2015, establishing the Oregon ABLE program, the bill required the Oregon 529 Savings Board to establish rules for the Oregon ABLE program in accordance with the requirements of the Federal ABLE Act. It then proceeded to list a few of the provisions in the Federal ABLE Act, including the residency requirement. So in the Dash 2 amendment, we are asking that ORS 178.380 be amended to strike Section G to reflect the change in federal law. This will allow us the flexibility to grow the program and make the program more cost-effective by allowing us to establish programs for those outside of the state. Accounts outside of the state.
Mm-hmm. Senator Bartrager.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I gather that the only reason that we're doing this change is to align ourselves with the change at the federal level.
Chair Haas, Senator Bartrager, that is correct.
Thank you.
Senator Ryan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So there are other
of the federal code in our bill, a description of the federal code, and if they change those, we'll have to have another amendment?
Chair Haas, Senator Riley, that would be correct.
So why don't Senator we, Riley? Why don't we get rid of all of them and all of those, you know, things that describe the federal code as we do in other areas?
Chair Haas, Senator Riley, that's a possibility. We wanted to make this as simple as possible. Frankly, I don't anticipate some of those changes being made. I can go through and look at what the statute says specifically, but some of them are just kind of broad provisions, and so I'm hoping that that doesn't change, and we're hoping to keep this as simple as possible.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right, so that is the dash twos, and you saw, and this is the reconnect bill that we have to pass this session. We have all the paperwork necessary.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Fiscal reports, and so
what's the dash?
Perhaps dash two.
Dash two.
Senator Birchinger, if you'd be so kind to make a motion.
Chair Haas, I move the dash twos.
A2.
What's the date on it?
A2. It's a dash A2.
Okay. I move the dash two dated, what did you
818.
Say?
818.
A.
Eight.
A. Like A as in alphabet.
Oh, A.
A2.
A.
Two.
Two.
Yes.
Dated what date? What's the date?
17th.
17th? Chair Haas, I move the A2 amendments dated 2/18/16 into House Bill 4025A.
Senator Birchinger moves the dash A2s into House Bill 4025. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, motion passes.
Chair Haas, I move House Bill 4025 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Birchinger moves House Bill 4025 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? Senator Boquist is excused. The measure passes. And Senator Birchinger, would you carry this bill on the floor?
Oh, sure.
Awesome.
Can I have those three accountants with me?
All right. Thank you. I want to move now to
you want to see a long floor session?
A work session on Senate Bill 1507 for discussion purposes, not voting it today. Chris Allenack has joined us. How are you doing?
Good.
You have some new figures or new angles on the film credit and the biomass tax credit.
Sure, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I believe the policy under consideration, there's an amendment being drafted to the base bill 1507 that adds two different credits, the film and video credit and the biomass credit. And the film and video credit is largely what was in Senate Bill 1578, which, just to refresh everybody's memory, increased the annual cap for that tax credit to $14 million a year and then made some other policy changes regarding the distribution of the funds. What the amendment to 1507 will include is a gradual increase of that tax credit cap. It will increase to $12 million this year, and that'll be the only change this year. And then all of the other changes, the increase to $14 million, and then the allocation changes will be effective July 1, 2017. And then for the biomass manure, that gets extended to 2022 at a rate of $3.50. This is largely the dash 3 from 1507, with the change that the lower rate of $3.50 would be effective for tax year 2016. And the dash 3, it was effective for 2017. So what that does to the revenue impact is, so you have the table up there, the impact in 15-17, rather than being the $3.5 million for the film and video and zero for the biomass manure, the film and video goes down to a revenue loss of about 1.8, and the biomass manure is a revenue gain of about 1.5. So the revenue impact for the bill will be about minus 0.3 for the 15-17 biennium. The wolf depredation and the PUVDF are not included in the amendment that I'm describing.
Okay. Senator Riley?
You need a motion?
No.
No. I have no
questions.
Just
looking for comments. Just throwing it out there. And this, what you just gave us is not in OLIS yet. Just this table is still there.
Correct. The table's here. I just made the amendment request this morning.
Yes.
Yeah. So we will get that back, and as soon as we do get it, we'll post it and
consider it
and share it.
Okay. Okay.
So.
Go ahead.
I did hear, sort of through the grapevine, that the reduction in the biomass would have a problematic effect on the small biomass folks, and I wondered if we had someone to talk about that.
Representing small dairies,
nope.
We'll have to do some due diligence during the day today.
Okay.
I have spoken with dairy producers who represent small and have not characterized it that way.
Okay.
To me. And I've also spoken with the actual project developers that have worked on those projects, and they have not described it that way to me. But
okay. Well, thank you.
Okay. All right. I'm going to close our work session on Senate Bill 1507, carrying it over till tomorrow, and we'll meet back here tomorrow at the same time. We are adjourned. We are adjourned.